Hashir on Purim?
No. Today is January 11th, Parshat Shmot, our first class after the winter break in Mishnah, and we are in Perek Tshi'i, Perek Tet, the ninth chapter of Masechet Brachot, in the third Mishnah. What we're planning to do today is do that third Mishnah, Mishnah Gimel, and that should not take us very long. And after that, we will learn the Mishnah Berurah, the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah, on the subject of Birkat HaTov Meitiv. That's something that came up in Mishnah Bet, and it comes up again now in Mishnah today, Mishnah Gimel. And the last time we learned together, back before Hanukkah, we had started looking a little bit at the laws of Birkat HaTov Meitiv in the Mishnah Berurah. And we said that next time, after the break, we'll come back and do that more thoroughly. But we'll wait until after doing Mishnah Gimel and then do that more thoroughly in the Halakha, because Mishnah Gimel also is a little with Birkat HaTov V'Hameitiv. Here we go. So, the Mishnah says, why don't we just remind ourselves of the end of Mishnah Bet. The very end of Mishnah Bet had said, it's the last approximately 11 or 12 words of Mishnah Bet, Al, the last word of a line, Al habisorot tovot omer baruch hatov meitiv, val shmuot ra'ot omer baruch dayan emet. And the assumption is, the assumption of almost all the poskim, that the Mishnah's intention is to say these brachot b'shem u'malchut, with the full phrase baruch hata Hashem Elokeinu melech olam, baruch hatov meitiv, God who is good and does good, in the case of Bisarot Tovot, good news, and in the case of Shmuot Ra'ot, in the case of bad news, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Dayan Hemet, the true judge. And we will talk a little bit more about the meaning of the Brachot as we go on to Mishnah Gimel. Okay? So that's good news and bad news. And then Mishnah Gimel says, Bana Vayit Chadash, V'chkana chelim chadashim, Omer Baruch Shechianu. So translating word for word, built a new house, bought new kelim, and kelim is vessels, referring either to clothing or to housewares. It's both at the same time. Omer, you say, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Shehechiyanu V'kiyamanu V'giyanu Lazman Hazeh. We thank God for the new things that we have. Clothing or furniture or vessels, pots and pans, etc. Well, why did I say pots and pans? I'm sorry. Vessels. The serious things that really make you happy in your house. Pictures on the wall, furniture. And then it says, Mivarech al hara'a mi'ein hatova, which literally means, bless on the bad like the good. That word mi'ein, we might remember that word from a blessing that we often say after eating cake, right? We say the bracha that we sometimes call al hamichya, and the full true name of that bracha is bracha echat, Me'ein Shalosh. One bracha, Me'ein three. And why do we call it that? Because right, Birkat HaMazon has three brachot doraita. Birkat HaMazon that we just said has four blessings in it. The first three are doraita, and the fourth is derabanan, as we've talked in the past. Those three themes doraita are each divided into its own bracha. In the bracha we say after cake, those same three themes are there, but they're in one bracha. Right? The three themes are the mazon and the aretz and Yerushalayim. That's what we thank God for. Mazon, haaretz, and Yerushalayim. In Birkat Mazon, they're in three separate brachot, three separate chatimot. In this bracha after cake, or after wine, or after the fruits of the land of Israel, we say the same three themes in bracha hat. So the expression is bracha echat mi'ein shalosh. One bracha like three. One bracha the essence of three. or one bracha that comes from the root of three, mi'ein, from the root of, like, similar, identical. So that's the same word here. Mevarech al ra'ah, mi'ein tova. You bless on the ra'ah like the tova. Now, I don't know what that means. And now it says the opposite. Vala tova mi'ein hara'ah. You bless on the tova just like the ra'ah. Now, had it said just the first half of the sentence, bless on the ra'ah just like the tova, then it perhaps I'd understand. It's telling me you have to say a blessing for bad things just like for good things. And it's telling you, you know, I have to accept them and acknowledge God for the bad just like the good. That would make sense. But then it says the opposite. And on the good just like the bad. What does it have to tell you to say a blessing on the good just like you'd say it on the bad? That doesn't make sense.
What if you put in one of those alternate translations for the word that you were considering? That comes... the bad that comes from the good, or the good that comes from the bad, or something else. I mean, that, you know, perhaps there's
that sounds like a possibility.
I still would like to hear what we think of it philosophically. I'm not answering.
Well, sometimes this Moshe was before Aaron, Aaron was before Moshe, to show that they're equal. Right, in the Pasukim, sometimes...
Yeah, clear. So what would so that no, mean here?
So they're both equal. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're both equal, but we do say different brachot, right?
I mean, in perception.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, I don't have a better answer at this point. So we'll have to put on the table what we've just heard and see if it's possible.
There is a Monty Python answer. I know you're taping, but there is a Monty Python answer.
Yes.
I think the essence becomes acknowledge that there is good in a rotten situation. And at the end of life of Brian, I'll always look on the bright side of life.
So how would you translate it here? How'd you put that into the words?
That even if you had a bad situation, acknowledge, look at the good in the bad situation, not that I can figure out how to do that in all cases.
So what would that mean, halakha lamaaseh? Mivarech al ra'ah. Let's try each person's interpretation. So, Brooks said, "How would your interpretation fit into the words?"
Similar to what Martin's referred to, that try and see the good in what appears to be the apparent bad, and try to, and then also.
Well, let me challenge you.
Bless the bad. Yeah, why would you bless the bad in the good? I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm first because I'd like to hear from others.
Okay. So it doesn't. If I would take what you're saying.
Yeah.
Bless on the good, just bless on the bad, just like the good. Does that mean that on bad I say the blessing for good things? That can't be. That contradicts the end of the previous Mishnah that said there's two different brachot, right? One is Tov Meitiv, the other is Dayan Emet. I bless on the bad, the blessing for bad. I bless on the good, the blessing for good. So I can't. It can't be telling me that on the bad say the blessing for the good.
Can I give Barton Oris answer?
Yeah.
I think Barton Oris says that you bless Mevarech al Hara'ah Me'en HaTovah. It's the bad. It's something that's now bad, but good will come of it. And the example he gives is that there's a flood in someone's field, and the field gets flooded. That's bad, but after the flood passes, then it's good because it waters the field. And then in the case where Al HaTovah Me'en
HaRa'ah. And so therefore, it's bad, so you say the blessing on the for bad.
Right, even though you know that good will come from that.
Okay. So Eric just said the important words, even though.
Okay.
Eric's interpretation, which is the Barton Oris, which is Rashi, as we'll see, forces us to add words into the Mishnah. Where do you add those words in?
Even though it's bad.
Even though it's bad.
And then an example for the good is if you find something valuable even so that's good, even though you know that the king is going to find it and take it from you and then maybe even punish you.
So this interpretation requires the addition of words into the Mishnah. It goes like this. Mevarecha lera'a mi'ein atova, it means mevarecha lera'a even though mi'ein atova, even though it's going to get better. Bless on bad things, the blessing for bad things, even though good might come of it. Valatova mi'ein ara, bless on the good, the blessing for good, even though bad might come of it.
And it's hard to get that from the mi'ein?
And it's hard to get that from the mi'ein. Yes, I just want to say, that's the Bartanura,
okay.
Copying Rashi, and that's almost all the Mefarshim except for one commentator that I'll mention. But it's really, really, really difficult in the words.
So the emphasis is to try and be in the moment. And
exactly. Right, so Brooks just said the ideology that's clearly here, which is you have to recognize the truth of the present for what it is and not see it only in terms of the future. Live in the moment.
We do that as a natural, almost autonomic.
What is the blessing? Baruch Dayan Emes? Is that it?
The blessing for Ra is Baruch Dayan Emet, and we said the blessing is,
it's
going back to the previous
blessing.
Mishnah, Atova Meitiv.
Is the also Baruch Dayan Emes?
No, on the Tov you say Atova Meitiv.
Oh, excuse me. Atova Meitiv.
Right, we said earlier on Bisorot Tovot, on good news, you say Baruch Atov Meitiv. On bad news, you say Baruch Dayan Emet.
What are you saying we do naturally?
I went to a friend's house last night. We had a car jump three lanes to get to the exit. First reaction, everybody okay? Because we slammed around the car a little bit when we set the slowdown. First reaction, everybody safe and okay? We're all fine? Let's keep going. First reaction. Well, everybody safe and okay in a bad situation?
In an extreme situation, it focuses you on the moment. But a lot of times, I mean, my personality, you know, it's a lot of times I find myself, you know, dwelling on the past or worrying about the future, and I have to work on staying in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is reminding us of something, which is, there is also a strain in our thinking or a tendency in our style to say, oh, don't mention something good happened because evil eye. You can't, don't say anything about it. Shush.
Uh-huh.
And this is saying that's not a correct approach.
Oh, yeah.
Say the blessing. It's good. Speak it out. Be thankful for that good. You're allowed to speak it out and say it.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
So no superstition in plain English.
And then to go back to what Brooks said about being fearful of the future, not being able to live in the present. Well, Brooks was talking about fearful of a possible negative situation in the future. Let's think of the opposite. What about possible good situations in the future? And this Mishnah says, don't live in the future even then. If you have a bad situation, it says, say Baruch Dayan Emet. Admit that the bad is bad.
Yeah.
Now let me ask a question.
Don't count your eggs before they hatch.
Okay, now let me ask a question. Does this contradict or does this not contradict the famous statement of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva's teacher that gamzu l'tova? This is also
for good. I would think it contradicts. Because, at least according to this interpretation, you're not... You only bless on the moment, on what you're experiencing on the moment, and not what will come from that. And at the end here, Bartanura brings Rambam that adds, because you don't bless in the future because you don't know if the future will be. The future may be or may not be.
Does he say even though, though? Does he say even though? In the Bartanura, does he say even though? Does he say,
yeah,
but this is what happens?
Yeah,
that's the word that Rashi and all the commentators have to add here. Afalpi.
Oh, wow.
So let me go back to what Eric said. It might seem that ideologically there's a certain tension here. We've all heard it said, Yebeseda, it'll be okay. Gamzo l'tova, this is for the best, things will work out. It has a silver lining. Look at the bright side of things. And here the Mishnah says, wait a second. Something bad happened. Well, admit it, accept it, see it for the bad in it. Even though you know that good might come of it, you still say, Baruch Dayan Emet. So certainly, 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 it's telling us that you're not supposed to say that everything is only for the good, because it's not. Sometimes it's for the bad. But I'm not sure that it completely contradicts. Ideologically, there's certainly a tension here, but you can still hold the stick from both ends. You can say that the Mishnah tells us accept the bad for what it is, admit it, but that doesn't, of course, prevent us from hoping that good will come of it. But that hope shouldn't prevent us from admitting the truth of the present situation.
I was just thinking about yesterday's parsha. You know, should Yosef have been happy when he was in the pit? This is all going to be good.
No. Right, and you don't have to.
Bad place to
because ultimately, you know, he says it was for good, which you did, my brothers.
Yeah, that was not at the moment, though. That was
right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Back in the pit, he certainly was not happy.
Yeah.
Well, there's a philosophic objective here ultimately, and the philosophic objective is as a human, as an individual, in the moment of a bad situation, how do you go on? How do you sustain yourself through the bad situation in the absence of looking for the silver lining? How do you train yourself to do that? This is totally extraneous to the Mishnah, but on the other hand, how do you motivate yourself in that?
Well, it's not extraneous. It's what this is about, I think. Okay. Yeah, it is.
I'll tell you what I think the Mishnah is saying. I'm not sure that I myself am able to put it to practice or identify it with it, but the very fact that the Mishnah says you say a bracha that acknowledges God's providence over a bad situation, and the bracha recognizes that the bad situation is bad, means that I'm accepting that this is part of God's plan. What I could have done and I don't do is say, it's all going to be good. The bad is good. And that's the way I accept it. They say it's not really bad. No, the Mishnah says, no, it's bad. But acknowledge that the bad comes from God. It's part of His plan. I don't know why. I don't know how.
And I have to deal with it.
And you have to deal with it. Part of the psychological process to me in bad situations is saying out.
Exactly.
This is bad. It is a psychological assistance, I think.
Yeah.
It's a bad situation. It's a bad circumstance. Catastrophe has happened. We all have had things like this. It is bad. And then you have to work. It can't happen instantaneously if it's really bad. But over time, then you put it behind you. And you look the other way. But you have to upset it.
And it prevents you from any type of denial mechanism.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You aren't allowed to deny it and pretend.
And denial sometimes prevents us from dealing with it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I want to say that even though...
Is there at least one psychology degree of
maybe it's
the table
not, it's here? Not contradictory, maybe. But even though is saying that we know that something is going to good or bad come out of this, even though that's going to happen, even though we know that's going to happen, we should make the bracha either on the ra or on the tov. That doesn't necessarily mean I have an attitude that this is bad. I can say, you know what, even though I know this is going to either... There might be bad things going to come out of this, or might be good things going to come out of this. I have to make this bracha, like you were saying before, Rabbi.
For the present.
Yeah, just the bracha. I need to make this bracha. Because even though I know, even though the bad might be coming to be good, I still have to make this bracha.
Yeah.
Not the other one.
And the Rambam comes in and says, you don't know what the future holds, basically.
Now, we're going on to something else, but we might not be going on to something else. We'll see. The Mishnah says, "Hatzoek l'sha'avar, harei zo tfilat shav." Hatzoek, it's a present participle. He who is tzoek, and we might remember from Torah, the word tzoek sometimes means to pray, right? If you remember that at the moment that Am Yisrael has left Mitzrayim, is standing on the banks of the Red Sea. The Egyptians are approaching, and God says to Moshe, Matatsuekalai, I might have had a word wrong in my quote, what are you tsuek to me? Rather move forward, says God. And there it's clear that tsuek means to cry out, to pray, to beseech. And that's what the word means here. He who cries out, lishavar. Lishavar means, see the word there, ayin bet resh, avar.
Past,
right? He who cries out for the past. Someone who prays to God, he wants the past to be different. Not the future, the past. Hare zot tfilat shav. Behold, this is a tfilat shav. This is a meaningless prayer. Or a better translation might be, anyone want to help me?
In vain.
In vain. This is a prayer in vain. You're not allowed to ask God for the past to be different, because it won't be different. It's true, God does miracles, but we don't pray for miracles.
No, that's the Gra.
What does he bring? I don't know.
It says the Gra adds to this, and he says that you're even not allowed to pray for something that doesn't go, that it would be a miracle, that doesn't go according to the laws of nature. Afal devar sheyachol liyot ele shelo al pi derech hateva, ki im derech hanes harei zot tfilat shav.
Yeah. Because, of course, God can change the past. But that's a miracle. We don't pray for miracles. Ketzad, how so? Now, there's an example of a tefillat shav, of someone who is so ek l'shavar, who prays for the past. Haita ishto mu'uberet, was his wife pregnant, right? Mu'uberet means pregnant. Like we say, chodesh mu'ubar, pregnant month, means a month is an extra day. Or shana mu'uberet, the leap year, is a pregnant year. V'amai yihiratzon sh'teled ishti zachar. May it be the will, yihiratzon, may it be the will, sh'teled, that will give birth, ishti, my wife, zachar. Right? If she's already pregnant, you cannot pray for a male son, because what's going to be is already determined. And then it says, another example, Rizut filachav. Haya va bederek. He was coming on the way. Now that you're on the path, you were traveling. Vishama kol tzvacha be'ir. And he heard the sound of a tzvacha, a tumult, in the city. You're coming home from a business trip. You've been away for 5 days or 5 months. And you hear that there's a robbery going on, or a murder, God forbid, in the city. Vamar yehi ratzon shelo yiyu elu b'nei veiti. May it be the will that these will not be the sons of my house, won't be my family. Harezo tfilat shav. Behold, that's a tfilat shav. Because whatever happened is happening. You can't change where the robbers or the bandits or the murderers have gone into the city. It's happening now. You can't pray that it not be your family, because what is is.
What is this?
This is very powerful.
These are two very different subjects in the same.
Which of the two different subjects you're referring to?
The first sentence and the second sentence, or the first Bana Bayit Chadash, etc., and Hatzoek Shel L'Sheavar. These are substantially different topics.
Yeah.
No relation at all.
I agree. It looks like that line of Bana Bayit Chadash might refer more to the previous Mishnah, right? Good news and bad news, and we really wonder how it got in there. I agree. Perhaps we'll have to go back to that. But I want to concentrate on the matter of the Tefillat Shav, because if you think of it, how many of the things that happen in our lives, and we would hope or pray that they be for the good, how many of them are really already determined when we say it, we say? And it's not just the case of my praying that my wife's going to give birth to a zachar after she's already pregnant. Just think of someone who would pray that I passed the test after he took the test.
Right?
And how many of the things we hope for in life are already determined when you're in the process of hoping or praying? I'm going for a colonoscopy.
how do you say in English? That
colonoscopy.
And I hope that the results, even before I go for the test, I'm hoping the results will be positive. Will be good.
But it's already determined.
But it's already determined. It's determined 3 years ago if I have cancer or not. 2 years ago, a year ago. I go for a blood test. I hope it shows my cholesterol is not too high. But if it is or it's not high or low, that's determined a month ago or a week ago.
Yeah, the test only tells you the results, but the results are already there.
How many things in life are actually turned out to be a tefillat shavuah? Anyone have any more examples of the things that you've hoped or prayed for?
Well, God forbid, when there's a tragedy or something, you pray that no one that you knew was injured.
That's explicit.
That's explicit, okay.
Yeah, you're right.
But that comes up a lot in Israel, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Tosfos actually asked this question. I think it's in Kesuvos. Uh-huh. And he says, how can it be that if everything's predetermined, why are we davening for things when on Rosh Hashanah, it's already like determined mm-hmm. how much we're going to get or whatever is going to happen? He says, in a tefillah tzibur, if you daven in a minyan, it can change the
gazardin.
The gazardin, it can change
things. Okay, but that is at least theoretically or possibly different than this. This is a case in which in the mitziyut, in the reality of the physical in which we know, the cards already been dealt. It's not what you're talking about, in which we, in our earth, the cards weren't dealt, but we believe they were dealt in heaven. But here, we know, if we just think of it a little bit, that all the cards were dealt already. Now, the more you think about it, the more you realize that probably most of the tefillot would think to pray, rarely tefillat shav. Are there any actually tefillot that aren't tefillot shav?
Well, we, in the sense of, take the health example, if somebody's sick, we pray for, we hope they'll get well. Now, we don't understand enough in certain circles to know if that's physically absolutely determined that they won't or will or not. We really don't know. It's unknowable, and in fact, I guess we believe that that is still subject to being influenced by God. And so we pray for that.
So there your prayer is, I hope that something will happen.
Yes.
These cases, I hope that something
has
happened.
Or is it the present? Present or past?
Well, actually, the borderline is not so clear at all.
Yeah.
It's a little difficult because we have circumstances where people have illnesses that we think, I mean, we pray in the health matter, I mean, it's just the most explicit because the closer a person is to death, the more fervently we pray.
Right.
Even though we know if only we had been praying like this 2 years ago, maybe it would have done some good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to be crass about it.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the Grah come in about Derech HaTeva also. I think the Grah adds to not only something that was, but something, even something that would go against the laws of nature, the basic laws of nature. We don't pray for.
According to that, we shouldn't pray in these health situations.
Right.
I would even
But
ask.
No one will not.
Right.
Yeah.
Theory
than this practice.
I have a larger question that goes to Reuven's point. If everything is predetermined, it's determined more or less on a micro or individual basis. When it's for the tzibur as a whole, you're talking about exhorting group behavior. And that is, I don't want to use the word changeable so much as you can, I'm looking for the right, I think you're nodding your head over there.
Well, I'm trying to understand, honestly.
Exhorting, bringing the tzibur awareness to the larger situation. To the collective situation and trying to modify that behavior even though you're saying the individual constituents have already been determined. That's what I'm looking at in that point. I guess this is a psychology example. Okay, enough of that.
It's
going to bother me the rest of the day.
Certain things aren't decreed in Rosh Hashanah.
But again, that's not, I think, what this Mishnah is talking about. We remember that the whole foundation of what we've been discussing is very difficult in the language of the Mishnah. Remember, we said we're talking about saying a blessing. I'm sorry, in the previous matter. I'm going back to the previous matter. Mevorech al ra'ah, the second line of the Mishnah, mi'eina tova, see a blessing on the bad. Just like the good, we said it means saying blessing on the bad, despite that it's going to be good. What I want to do now is look at the commentary of the Meiri, who understands the words differently, and he will allow us, through his interpretation, to see how seemingly variant parts of the Mishnah actually fit together.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say something real quick before we move on? That seeing what I saw as a, trying to fit together what I saw as a variant part, because the first part of this section that we just started reading seemed to say, you know, not to worry about the past, okay, because that is in vain. Mm-hmm. And then it said, you know, the examples were seemed to be present concerns,
mm-hmm.
okay. But what we said is, you know, that really what's at stake has already been determined. So while you think you're dwelling in the present, while you think you're concerning yourself with something that is, you're actually still dwelling in the past, you know, and so again, the emphasis is to be in the present and not to fool yourself.
I think that's very good,
yeah.
Right? That both parts of the Mishnah talk about acknowledging the given truth of the moment. Okay, that's good. And the Meiri is only going to help us see that not only thematically, but also linguistically. So the Meiri, Rav Menachem HaMeiri, from Provence in the 13th century, his commentary is photostated on a separate piece of paper, which everyone should have. Right, the Meiri?
Yes.
I'll just mention, if I haven't said this before, that the Meiri was a major, major Rishon, a major thinker. He wrote a commentary on the whole Shas, the whole Talmud. It's an encyclopedic work. It's clearer and more straightforward than any other commentary written by any of the Rishonim. Its clarity and its lucidity parallels that of the Rambam, but the Rambam didn't write a commentary. He wrote a work of Halakha. The Meiri's commentary on the Gemara is as clear as the Rambam's code of law. The Hebrew is clear Hebrew, the language structure, the ideas. He was a great thinker. But on the other hand, his influence in the development of Halakha was limited, and probably the reason for that is that his writings were lost to the Jewish people for hundreds of years. All of the major achronim until the middle of the 19th century never heard of the Meiri. And I just don't remember the exact story, but in the middle of the 19th century was discovered, his writings were discovered and published. But the Shulchan Aruch never heard of the Meiri, for example.
So,
how do you spell Meiri? In Hebrew and English? Mem, Aleph, Yud, Reish, Yud. Mem, Aleph, Yud, Resh, Yud.
They were burned. Some of his works were burned, weren't they?
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I never heard of that, so I wouldn't. Okay, so anyway, you see my bracket there, right?
Yes.
And it says, HaMishnah HaShishit. In our counting, it's not the Mishnah HaShishit, but in his counting it is. Right now, counting, it's the Mishnah HaShlishit. He says, Mivarech al hara'a mi'ein hatova. That's a quote from our Mishnah. Then he says three letters, which are shortened from the word klomar. The letters that are missing are memresh. Klomar, that is to say, sheyivarech al hara'a hatov meitiv. Say on the ra'a hatov meitiv. V'chein ha-mivarech al ha-tovah min ha-ra'ah. Then he says, Reish Lamed. I'm not expecting you to understand now. I'm just reading the words through. Reish Lamed is Rotze Lomar. Literally wants to say. It means to say. In other words, I.E. Reish Lamed Rotze Lomar. Sheyivarech al hatova dayan emet. That you will bless on the tova dayan emet. Harei ze ke'en tfilat shav. Behold, this is like a tfilat shav. This is like a tfilat shav. In other words, if on the bad you say a tov meitiv, and if on the good you say dayan emet, this is like a tfilat shav. I want to go back to the Mishnah and show you what he's doing. It's not immediately apparent. He's actually assuming a certain way of learning the Mishnah that he thinks is obvious, therefore he's not explaining it. We have to go back to the Mishnah and figure out what he's doing.
For one, he's reading into the first, right? I mean, he's assuming that there is a deep connection between the two parts, which we said before were separate.
Exactly.
That's the first.
Exactly.
Part. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. If we go back to the Mishnah now, we have to ignore the punctuation that this particular editor put into it. I'm beginning from the second line. You know what I'm going to do? Actually, before we read the Mishnah, we're going to now see the Mishnah as it's brought down in the Gemara. That's what we have to do. So let's go to the Gemara. I'll tell you which page of Gemara we are interested in a moment. We are interested in the page of... There's two different pages of Gemara.
Yeah.
So we want Nun Dalet. Nun Dalet and Mudalet. And I'm going to point out one letter in the Mishnah as it appears in the Gemara. Right, this is the beginning of the ninth perek. All of the Mishnah is brought here. It's not divided up. It's all brought. And you see the end of my bracket here, Harezo Tfilat Shav. So look at a few words before that. I'm reading the last six words of my quote. Vehatsoek lishaavar harezo tfilat shav. Do you see that? Everyone see that?
Yeah.
There's one letter that's here that's not in our Mishnah as it's printed in the copy of Lukin, and that letter makes all the difference. Exactly, Mr. Gal just said it. The vav. Vehatsoek lishaavar. And he who cries out on the past.
Yeah.
That and makes all the difference in the world.
Uh-huh.
And that and is the basis of what the Meiri is telling us. That this matter of Tzoek L'Shavar, Harei Zot Tfilat Shav, is not a separate matter. It's a continuation of what came earlier, so that the words Harei Zot Tfilat Shav refer not only to the matter who's praying about the bandits and are praying about the male child, it's also the person who's praying about the bad and the good.
Yeah.
So now let's go back to the Mishnah and understand it. Let's go back to the Mishnah and understand the way the Meiri reads it. And it's now quite simple. Mivarech halara'a mi'ena tova means he who blesses on the bad as if it's good.
Yeah.
And it's literally what the words say. Mivarech halara'a, the blesser on the ra, mi'ena tova, just like the tova. If you bless the ra, just like you bless the tov.
You say baruch atov amit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You say baruch tov meitiv on bad news. And the opposite. Vala tova, and on the good news, mi'en ra, you bless. On the good news, you say baruch dayan amet, because you're afraid of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And hatsoek leshavar, and someone who prays to change the past, harezo tfilat shav. They're all in the same category.
He has no idea what's going to happen. He has no idea what's going to happen in the future.
They did not have
But you have a certain hope or a certain fear, like the Gemara mentions and brought by the Bar Tanora that Eric mentioned. The Gemara says two examples. You found a mitzia, which is great,
but you're afraid the kingdom's going to come, take it from you, and also punish you for finding it. Or the other example the Gemara gives of the opposite case is that there was a flood, a terrible flood, and wiped out your crops. But the sediment brought by the flood is going to fertilize your field for the future. So if you take the case in which you had this terrible flood, it wiped out all your crops, killed hundreds of people, but you say, Baruch Hashem, my field has been fertilized, it's a tefillat shav. Or if you find a mitzvah that you can clothe your whole family, but you're afraid the king will come and take it and jail you, and you say, Baruch Dayan Anet, Harezo tefillat shav. In other words, as far as the meaning goes, it doesn't change anything we learned. It's the same basic idea. That the way Rashi learned it was that you have to bless on the bad even though it might be good. It's a commandment, according to Rashi.
Yeah.
It's a command. Mivarech, command. According to the Meiri, it's a description that if you blessed on the bad like the good, or on the good like the bad,
right,
it's a tefillat shav. So there's really no difference as far as ideology goes. It's just an easier, cleaner, more linguistically straightforward way of learning. It's a better linguistic explanation. As far as ideology, I don't think so that there's a difference. And it really makes the connection that Brooks was pointing out between the different parts of the Mishnah. That in both cases, whether it's the tefillah for the zachar, the tefillah that my kids aren't being molested by this bandit, or whether it's the matter of the flood that ruined my field, and I see the good that will come of it, what we're supposed to do, in all cases, if we don't accept the present situation for what it is, it's called a tefillat shav.
But the second part of the Mishnah, and then it says ketzad. So I would think it would maybe give three different examples for the different cases. And the second part of the Mishnah seems to only address the hatzoek l'shavar.
Very good. So Eric is pointing out that if all of these cases we're talking about are all tefillat shav, then the Gemara should go on and give examples for all cases.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It gives examples only for the tefillat shav of tzoek l'sha'avar. Well, actually, you're right.
Oh, okay.
But the word ketzad in our Mishnah is missing from the Mishnah as it's found in the Gemara.
Oh, okay.
What we're meaning, what?
We'll go back, the word ketzad, let's go back to the Mishnah as it's here.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll read in my brackets, and then we'll go even a little bit further. See my brackets? In the in the Gemara? My back in the Gemara.
Yeah,
in the bracket.
Yeah.
Bana bayit chadash, that's in our Mishnah. V'kana kilim chadashim. Omer bruch shechianu v'kimanu v'gyanu l'zman hazeh. Notice there are more words here of the blessing than we have in our Mishnah, but that doesn't really matter. Just remind us how fluid texts are, right? Mivarecha l'ra'a mi'ein al hatova. That word al didn't appear, by the way, in our Mishnah.
Yeah.
Here it's even more, it's difficult to put in Rashi's interpretation with the word al, because what it says is, bless on the bad like on the good. Bless on the bad like you bless on the good. And again, according to the mirror, it's a description of what you did. Someone who blessed on the bad like he blesses on the good, and on the good like he blesses on the bad, ve, and someone who tzuik l'shavar, harezo tfilat shav. Then it goes on to say, haitayish tomu uberet, his wife was pregnant. And it doesn't say ketzad.
Uh-huh.
Does that make a big difference? Does it make a big difference? Makes a tiny difference. In any case, to sum this up, Rashi and all the commentators understand by adding the words, as we saw in the Bar Tanura, even though the Meiri manages to understand the same meaning, but in a different linguistic reading that's cleaner without adding those words. And the Meiri certainly fits very well with the addition of the Vav that's found in this version of the Mishnah as printed in the Gemara. And by the way, it's pointed out by Professor Hanoch Albeck that that Vav appears in the major manuscripts of the Mishnah, V'hatzoek.
Huh.
So we have two different interpretations, but again, ideologically, it's the same basic idea.
You know, while we're talking about these additions and linguistics, it's interesting the Aleph at the end of the word Shav. I mean, I mean, it's, you know, no letter is for naught, but this is really, it seems, you know, extraneous here.
And in a word
where it's saying, you know, that something is in vain, I mean, this is, I think, an example of it.
Okay. That's nice.
We won't say that what you said is in vain.
I don't
Rabbi,
think it
keeps popping in my head when you're talking about davening. Not davening that the child should be a girl or a boy. I heard that you're allowed, a person's allowed to daven within the first 40 days after the conception.
Uh-huh. Like the Gemara says, in the first 40 days, the fetus is maya ba'alma. It's mere water. So it don't remember, that's the Midrash that said the first 40 days the sex is not determined. The Mishnah doesn't make that distinction, but possible. Okay, let's see if there's anything else you want to say about this Mishnah, about its structure, about its connection to the previous Mishnah. I'll just give everyone a minute or two to think about it.
Can you just repeat for me the word that's missing here? I'm sorry, I didn't catch what word is gone.
There's a word that's gone in the version that appears in the Gemara. That's the word ketzad.
With the question mark.
It's the third line, the third to last word of the line.
Oh, yes, thank you. Okay.
It doesn't make a big difference. It makes a tiny difference.
And
the real important difference...
Ketzad means...
How so? Let's just think about the structure of things, and then we can go on.
Does call into question a fundamental theological argument with Christianity.
Ah, can you explain? I don't know exactly what you
mean. Praying for miracles.
Uh-huh.
And also teaching people not to worry so much about the present. It's all going to be taken care of.
Ah!
Oh, that's what I thought.
Ah! Yeah. And actually, I was thinking of that as I was driving to davening this morning. I was thinking of something we've mentioned in the past in this room, something I don't have first-hand experience of, but I've heard. I've heard of certain Christian weddings that are presented as positive, happy events. Right?
You mean funerals.
Funerals.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yes. Certain Christian funerals.
That's why no one understands me.
Yeah.
I say the opposite of what I mean. I talk in riddles.
Who would have thought a wedding is happier?
Yeah, I've seen that. That Baptist community.
Yeah. So that's a perfect example of someone who's Mevarech ala ra'ah mi'ina tova. It's bad, but it's being presented as a blessing. Right? So we would learn from our Mishnah that you mourn at a funeral. Now, it might be that you believe that the soul is going to be in a better state, but that's a second stage. For us right here, a tragedy is happening. We have to admit and stand face to face with that tragedy, not deny it, as we talked earlier, and then we're able to deal with it only when we admit that evil is evil. Bad is bad. Suffering is suffering.
You're reminding me of the shiur you gave in Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur. And you were talking about how we were considered, why we're dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're saying this is what the situation we're in right now. We don't know what's going to be. But now, I'm considered. You know, I'm dressing as if I'm in the grave already. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, there's another example I wanted to mention that I think is Yom Ha'atzmaut. You know, a lot of people. Say special tefillot on that day, but others who are opposed to it say, well, there was a great war that happened as a result of that, and there were a lot of people killed in that war. In 1948, there were a lot of people killed in the war that came after, so how can you bless on something good? It was a terrible tragedy. There were thousands of people killed.
Mm-hmm.
And this Mishnah may speak in support of Yom HaTzmut as a blessing.
And then Martin just responded, we have Yom HaZikaron.
Yeah.
And
you go into
then
Yom
HaTzmut.
Right.
So I hope we'll get to it. In the material that we're about to see right now in the Mishnah Berurah, it says very clearly there are times in life in which you say Baruch Dayan Emet, and immediately afterwards you say Shehiyanu. And that actually what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
That you admit that this bad and you accept it as bad, whereas there might be some good in it, and then you bless for the good. It's just like Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaTzmut. They're both there.
Right.
And one doesn't eclipse the other. Oh, that's powerful stuff. It's about admitting the dialectic of life and not trying to color one as if it's not there, or color it in light of the other.
But the focus on Yom HaTzmut is on the positive. That's the point.
But only after we celebrated Yom HaZikaron the day before.
Right.
Yeah, like you said, by the wedding, Baruch Dayan Emet and then Shehiyanu.
That's terrible.
Or the opposite. Or is it first Shehiyanu and then Baruch Dayan Emet?
Well, it's interesting because the breaking of the glass and remembering Yerushalayim, that's related to that a little bit too.
Okay, that's a good
the national tragedy. And then
I recently saw this movie that's out right now, the Curious Case of Benjamin Button, about a man who's born old and progressively grows young and then dies. And I think, you know, one of the main points of the movie is to live in the present and not, you know, worry about when you're old or when you're young, you know, but to be present in the moment. And I think about that in terms of our holidays most at Sukkot, when we are to sit in what can be a comfortable place and can also be an uncomfortable place, but regardless, we are supposed to be masters of our emotions and be happy, whether it's raining or not. And that's also apparent in the dichotomy of what we say the sukkah is from, whether it's from when we were in the desert or whether it's from when we were harvesting or going for pilgrimage. Is it remembering when we were, you know, destitute, or is it remembering when we were plentiful?
Uh-huh.
Whether regardless, it's the same, you know. And back here, we started off talking about a bite. We're talking about our dwelling place, talking about our present situation, where we are, and that's ultimately a matter of, you know, of how we perceive things and being in the moment, whether it's good or bad, trying to master our emotions, but being realistic present about it too, you know, God has sent us bad, God has sent us good. Not fool ourselves.
What about those people who have bankruptcy in their house? What kind of blessing do they say? The house is in bankruptcy. Or those people who invested with Madoff the money, what kind of bracha do they say?
Baruch Dayan Emet.
Right. That's it.
Invested with Madoff.
I have a question I can't contain. To your point, somebody who is sitting Shiva transitions immediately to celebrating Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same thing? I'm just looking for any acknowledgement, any specific sukkim, brachot, that you would say that aligns with this. And I don't know.
Yeah, but it's the same idea that we have bad and good, and they're each there.
And I'm looking, do we have any acknowledgement of bracha of some kind in that the person
who observes Shabbat publicly as everyone else does?
Yeah.
Or perhaps the transition, you mean, is the entrance after Lecharoti, during Kabbalat Shabbat?
Just the same way we're talking about which bracha comes in this situation. I'm just looking for, have we adopted anything there?
I don't know.
Yeah, we're okay here.
We're gonna go on, okay?
Okay.
Go on to the Mishnah Berurah. The Shulchan Aruch with the comment, but there's some very interesting things there. Let's go. So everyone has the packet of material.
Okay.
the packet of material. It's got 5-6 pages stapled together. There are no brackets there. I have brackets only in my original, so I'll tell you where we're putting the brackets in. And you know what? To make life easier for us, should we do it like this? You want to do it like this? Before we start, you can take a pencil if you want and put in the brackets for yourself. So look in the first page. The first page. We're going to be learning only in the left-hand column. Mm-hmm. The last word on that line is kos. Mm-hmm. A beginning aval. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go on for three lines until the word yayin acher. Mm-hmm. Okay? Yes. And we'll also be looking at the shart hatsiyun at the bottom of the page, the very last line where it says gimel. Mm-hmm. And the ending bracket is on the next page. So moving to the next page. And in the next page, we'll be doing Mishnah Berurah from the, where my finger is the very first line of the Mishnah Berurah, very first line beginning from the Gimel, mm-hmm. all the way down to the last line in the same column where it says Tova Kol Kach.
Dalet,
before the Dalet.
Before the Dalet.
Just Gimel.
And in the Shar HaTziyun, mm-hmm. we'll be learning the first line and a half until
Dalet.
Until right before the Dalet with the words B'sharei Tshuva. And then we'll turn to the third page. And on the third page, we will only be learning the second column of the Mishnah Berurah, the second half of that second column beginning from the Gimel, mm-hmm. which is a line that is the very end of the line. It ends with the word Al. And we're learning 1, 2, 3, 4 and a half lines until where my finger is ke'ahat.
Mm-hmm.
Ke'ahat. And then on the next page, we will be learning from the fourth line of the Mishnah Berurah, the last two words on the line, where it says k'sheshoteh. The fourth line of the column, second to the last word of the line, kshishote.
Okay. There's not a cup in there.
Kshi. There is.
Kshishote, yeah.
Oh, kshi. Okay, I just didn't hear the k.
And then we're learning just line and a half to the end of next line, Birkat Hatov.
Uh-huh. Well, the end of what? Yeah.
And immediately. And we're continuing on after that with the next line of Mishnah Berurah, the Dalet. And it goes all the way on to the end of the page. All the way on to the end of the page.
Starting from Dalet?
End of the page, exactly. Yeah. Right there. I hope we get further than that. I'm not sure we will, so let's go back now and start learning. So we read the Shulchan Aruch, and we see a little bit of Mishnah Berurah and Shaar HaTziyun. This is the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Kuf Ayin Hey, Dinei Birkat HaTov Meitiv Al Hayayin. Okay? So we're learning all the laws, as much as we manage to do, of Birkat HaTov Meitiv. I decided that since the Mishnah tells us about Birkat HaTov Meitiv, and there are other usages of this bracha that aren't in the Mishnah, but are common in our lives, and people often get this bracha wrong, they don't know how to use Birkat HaTov Meitiv, I thought we'd take this next hour to go into these laws. It says the Shulchan Aruch, Heviu lehem yayin, acher. Right, you have a meal, and there was wine on the table, whether it was kiddush or whether it was just a normal meal, you had yayin, and now they brought yayin acher. Different wine. Eino mivarech borei pri hagafen. You don't say borei pri hagafen because you said it once already. Aval mivarech alav hatov v'hameitiv. Rather, you bless hatov meitiv. Now, let me give you a little bit of background. This is talking about a case in which you said a bracha over wine and you drank wine. And then they brought another bottle of wine, different bottle of wine. Obviously, you don't say Birkat, great Pri Hagafen again, because you said it already, but you do say a different bracha. And as we'll learn, for better wine, you now say Birkat HaTov Meitiv. And which means you take the glass of wine, you say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam HaTov Meitiv, and you drink up. I just want to make one point clear, which is all this assumes that you really already said Brei Pri Hagafen, and you were Yotze Brei Pri Hagafen. But that's not always the case in Kiddush. I'll explain. And the halacha is like this. If someone else, not you, but the Baal HaBayit said Kiddush, and he said, Baruch Ata Hashem, Lokeinu Melech Olam, Brei Pri Hagafen, and he drank. If you drank less than a cheekful, you didn't fulfill Brei Pri Hagafen. I'll explain. If you did drink a cheekful of more, you did fulfill it. What does that mean? That means that if you drank less than a cheekful, then later in the meal they bring wine, you say Brei Pri Hagafen. If you had more than a cheekful, you already are Yotze, then you say Tov Meitiv. Is that clear?
So you're saying the person making Kiddush or every...
Person who made Kiddush has to drink at least a cheekful.
Right.
The person who listens to Kiddush doesn't have to drink a cheekful, but only if he does, is it considered that he drank wine with a bracha. If he drank less than a cheekful, then he will have to say Brei Pri Hagafen when they bring him wine later.
And if I could give a real case scenario where that will add a twist that we should consider, you know, to think about later. Meyer Din's son's bris was here, and we had a kiddush, and then he brought out later a bottle of wine that had been purchased for him a long time ago, and they had saved for a special occasion, and we shared it. A bunch of people took a picture, okay, and then drank it. Okay, I'm sure someone said this, okay, but I don't remember. But I'm assuming it was said. We drank it. It was bad. The wine had gone bad. So, something to think about.
Well, you said somebody brings along a better wine. I think the essence, I would argue with you, is somebody brings along a different wine.
We'll see a discussion of that. And the truth is that it's a compromise between what you said and I said. It doesn't have to be a better wine. It has to be a wine you know not to be worse.
Topic.
Here we go. So we'll read the halacha again. Hiviu lehem yain achar acher. Eino mevarech. Doesn't bless Brei Pri Hagafen, aval mevarech alav hatov v'meitiv. Says the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserlis, in the Haggah, in the gloss, afal gav she'ein lo od min harishon. Even though he doesn't have any more from the Rishon, from the first one. Now, it's not just that there's additional wine, it's even wine in place. There's no more left of the other, so they bring a different one. Even then, you say a tov v'ha metiv.
Afal gav?
Afal gav means afal pi. It's the same thing.
Okay. Gav is normally back.
Yeah. So let's now look at the Mishnah Berurah, going back to the first page. And the Mishnah Berurah, of all the Mishnah Berurah on the whole page, I chose just to look at one little detail in the bracket that you put in for yourselves 5 minutes ago. Aval al kos shel birkat hamazon ein tzarech levarech alav birkat atov meitiv af shehu yamin yain acher. Translation, but on the glass of birkat hamazon you don't need to say on it birkat atov meitiv even though it is a type of different wine. And the reason I thought we should emphasize that is because you could have made an error based on what we said. You might say, I made Kiddush on Shabbat and I had a big glass of wine and now we're saying Birkat HaMazon over the glass. How can I say Birkat Brei Pri Hagafen? I already said it. So here the halacha is different because once you say Birkat HaMazon, once you say Birkat HaMazon, your original Brei Pri Hagafen is gone. It no longer applies. Now what blessing do you say over the wine after Birkat HaMazon? Brei Pri Hagafen. So I just put that in brackets in order to eliminate that possible error that we might make. But if you were having the yain before Birkat HaMazon, you wouldn't say Brei Pri Hagafen, you would say Birkat HaTov V'Hamitiv. Now a little bit of Sharat Siyun at the bottom of the page. Who knows who wrote the Sharat Siyun? It's a trick question.
Well, I'm not falling for it.
The Sharat Siyun?
Yeah.
That's the name of the book.
It was written by the same person who wrote the Mishnah Berurah. In other words, this is simply the text, this is the footnotes, but it's written by the same author. Okay, so says the Sharat, and the Sharat Siyun in 90% of the cases is simply footnotes, citations, what he said above, but in certain cases he adds things. And here's a case when she adds something. So the very bottom of the page,
she,
Gimel.
You said she adds something.
I did?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I thought you did.
It's like the funerals and weddings. Don't worry.
Okay. Aval. Likach yain acher. Tov. The minyana kosot gufa. He's talking about Leil HaSeder. This is a segment we're learning beginning in February. He says, but to take different wine, good, there's better wine, for the number of the kosot themselves. In other words, what about the four kosot of wine? What if your second glass comes from wine that's better than the first glass? Right? Our custom of the Ashkenazim is to say over each four of the glasses, break Priya Guffin. But what happens if the second glass is different wine that's better than the first? Are you then supposed to say not Birkat HaGefen, but rather Atov Meitiv? What are you supposed to do? So he says, I'll read it all again. Aval likach yain acher tov leminyan kosot gufa. But to take different, better wine for the number of the kosot themselves, kagon shetaam kos harishon velo arev lo hayayin. For example, if he tasted the first glass and it wasn't pleasant to him, the wine, now in the fifth word of the next page, l'chule alma yichol likach min acher shel yayin l'kos sheni b'yavrich alav b'rei pri hagafin. According to all, he can take different wine for the second glass and l'varech alav b'rei pri hagafin. L'didan shenahaginan l'varech al kos sheni kibesiman tafayin gemel, according to our custom of the Ashkenazim, that we say a blessing on the second glass. The Sephardim don't say any blessing on the second glass of wine, and they say that.
Oh.
But Ashkenazim say brei pri
hagafen.
We do. And then he says, v'gam hatov meitiv. And also tov meitiv. So that's the halakha. So let's just remember that. So it means, if on the Seder night you have different bottles of wine, and you have your first glass of wine, Brei Pri Hagafen, and then for the second glass of wine, you want better wine, you take better wine, so this is the Mishnah Berurah on the Shaar Tzion, you say Brei Pri Hagafen, and you say Atov Meitiv, and then you drink up. I've never seen it done.
You say two blessings, you mean.
Two blessings.
It's interesting, that's not common practice. You pointed out, maybe because it's not common practice to bring wine that's known as better wine, or
usually pretty
the same
inexpensive same wine, all, you know, or even if you change, it's not considered good wine really.
Right. But if it does happen, then you say two blessings. But remember that normally you'd never say two blessings. Normally you said Brei Pri Hagafen in the first glass and a Tov Meitiv in the second. But Leil HaSeder, where the Ashkenazim heard there's a mitzvah to say Brei Pri Hagafen in each glass, then you have this anomalous situation in which you could end up saying two blessings on one glass of wine.
Okay? And the Seder night is just an exception to what we said about, or the rules, I guess, Ashkenazim for saying a blessing on each glass of wine.
Yeah.
Even though you just have already said it.
Right. As far as the laws of blessings go, you shouldn't do it.
Yep.
The Ashkenazim hold that it's a separate mitzvah. Therefore, it gets a separate bracha. It's a machloket back in the Gemara.
Why did you jump to the Seder from this paragraph sentence?
Well, I just told you the context. I know the context because that's what he's talking about in the Mishnah Berurah, that the footnote is going on. We didn't do the whole thing. Okay, so we finished the first page here. We're now on the second page.
The Sephardim say only the bracha and the first course, and not the...
And the first and the third. First and the third. Right, the Sephardim say the first and the third because the first is Kiddush. The second is the third is after Birkat HaMazon. Of course, you have to say over the third, right? And the fourth is covered by the blessing over the third, according to the Sephardim. So the Sephardim say on one and three, we say one, two, three, and four.
And we say one every one of them, yeah.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yep. Okay. And by the way, we'll learn about that next month.
Winery.
Okay, so now we're in the Mishnah Berurah. On the next page, the top of the Mishnah Berurah, and he's going, and what we just read, and we just remind you what we just read in the Mappa. The Mappa is the tablecloth over the Shulchan Aruch, over the set table written by the Rama, Rav Moshe Isler in the Haggah in the gloss, and it had said, Haggah afagav she'ein lo yain min harishon. Even though if the first bottle is finished, you're drinking different wine just because the first one is finished, you still say, Hatov v'amitiv. It's the second page. Yeah. And on that says the Mishnah Berurah, in Gimel af agav she'ein lo v'chule, ayein the Magen Avraham. Look into, study the Magen Avraham, who is the major commentator on the Shulchan Aruch, in Orech Haim, v'shem poskim, in the name of authorities, she'yesh de'ot b'zeh. There are opinions on this. In other words, there's a machloket. Valkein hichriu ledina, and therefore they decided for the law. De'im yesh lehem min harishon, that if there is of the first wine, viviu hasheni, and they brought the second one, kedei sheyit amu yain acher mishunem miyarish, in order that they taste different wine, different from the first. Mevarachin alav hatov meitiv. That's when you say hatov meitiv. Aval. Im ein lehem klal miyar rishon, but if they don't have it all from the rishon, it's just finished up. Im kein lo machmat shinui hiviu. If so, not for the sake of change did they bring the second one. Elami penei she kala rishon, but rather because it's finished the first. Ein mivrachin alav. You don't say the blessing of tov meitiv. Shein b'zeh ribui tova kolkach, because there isn't in this a flourishing of good so much. In other words, Birkat HaTov Meitiv, and here we understand something of the ideology of the blessing, is only, it's a blessing over affluence. It's a blessing over affluence. It's a blessing that says, good and good and good.
Right.
So if you bring a second glass of wine, a second bottle, only because the first one is gone, that's not affluence. But if you bring a second one in addition to the first, that's affluence. This usually doesn't apply in America because people bring the second wine not because the first is finished, usually, but it can certainly happen in Israel.
Yeah. So we have a machloket between the Ramah and the...
It looks like we have poskim that argue against the Ramah. The Mishnah Berurah says that those poskim are to be accepted, that we limit Birkat HaTov Meitiv. We don't say it in every case of a different, better type of wine, but only if the different better type of wine is brought while you still do have left of the first type.
Touching on what Eric said about, you know, why don't people make more brachas at the Seder, usually here it says hey viu, they brought it. This is not there on the table, they're bringing it, it's not on the table, but most of the wines at the Seder we have at the table already
placed on the table.
Does that make a difference?
We're going to get into that. Okay. That's a good point. We're going to get into that. It's mentioned in the next coming pages. Okay, so with this, we have finished all the Mishnah Berurah we want to see on this page, but we do have more Shulchan Aruch at the top to finish. Shulchan Aruch at the top. This is the end of the first line, Dalid, and it says, V'lav dafka hiviu lehem mechadash.
Wow.
Not necessarily if they brought for them anew. Exactly what you just brought up. Ella hu adin im haya lehem mitchila shtei yinot. Rather, it's the same thing. Hu adin means the same thing. Im haya lehem mitchila, they had from the beginning shtei yinot, two different types of wine. Mivrachin al habet. You bless on the second hatov meitiv. That's going to be modified a little bit as we see, but it means that ostensibly, even if they have both types of wine, you first drank the less good one, then you drink the better one gets hatov meitiv. Says the Ramah in the Haggah, v'davka, shelo hayu lefanav yahad, shebirech berei pri hagafen. Specifically, if they weren't in front of him together, when you said break for your gafin. Aval, I'm at the top of the next page. Aval hayu biyahad ein sarif levarech ela bray pri hagafin. But if they were together, you don't say anything but bray pri hagafin. So we seem to have a certain compromise here, and the compromise is that if both were on the table, then you don't see a tov meitiv. But if you owned both of them, but the second one wasn't on the table, and then it only came to the table, then that's when you say atov meat, even all the more so if you just acquired the second one.
If a guest just walked in the door and brought it to you.
Right. So that's what we have to think of. If all the bottles of wine are at the table at the beginning, you don't say Tov Meitiv, but if one is brought from the kitchen, then you do say Tov Meitiv. Okay, going on. The second line of the Shulchan Aruch, Bet. There's a bet there. Mivarchin HaTova Meitiv Al Kol Shinuyayin Min Hastam Afilu Eino Yudea Shasheni Mishubach Meirishon. That's what you brought up earlier. Kol Sheino Yudea Shu Garua Mimenu. Translation, Garua means bad, worse. Translation, we bless HaTov Meitiv on any change of wine, Min Hastam.
Probably.
In a regular case. Even if you're not certain, if you don't know, that the second one is better than the first.
Sure, yeah.
As long as, kol, in this case, means as long as you don't know that it's worse than the first.
So that covers the bris.
Right, since you didn't know that it was worse,
it's okay.
You assumed it was better,
right.
Then you're certainly allowed to say a tov meitiv.
And it wasn't avo.
As long as you don't know for certain the second wine is worse, then you say a tov meitiv. Like take me, doesn't know anything about wine. As long as I don't know for certain the second wine is worse, you know, what do I know? So if in the case of what I know, so you say tov meitiv over the second one.
If you have a price tag in front of you, $30 and $5.
Okay, so then even I would know.
You have to be a professional wine taster.
I don't know, there's some people that they can't tell even
the bottle cap. Or the bottle cap.
That's why I said let's go to a winery, because they'll tell us, you know, teach us what's better.
You don't have to know, right? You don't have to be a professional wine taster. You always say a tov meitiv unless you are certain that the second one is worse than the first, and again, the condition is that it wasn't on the table at the same time, it was brought later.
Is this reshut or chova? That we may get to this, but...
Is saying Birkat HaTov Meitiv reshut or chova? That's actually a very interesting question. It would seem to be chova, but it's pointed out later that many people have gotten into the habit of being lax with this bracha, and the Mishnah Berurah says it's not good. You should be saying it. Okay. So now we read the Haggah, and it says Haggah is almost the middle of the fourth line. Ve'ein chiluk bein shnayim chadashim, or achad chadash ve'achad yashan. I'm in the fourth line of the Shulchan Aruch. Ve'ein chiluk, there's no difference between both of them new or one of them old. Old here means aged. One of them new and one of them aged. So it doesn't matter age or not. Then I'm skipping all the matters in brackets, which is actually a full half line, until we get to, because that was just sources. Vafilu shatami menu toch shloshim yom. Even if you already drank it within the past 30 days. In other words, you say a tov meitiv over wine that you don't know to be worse, even if you had a glass of that same wine just yesterday. But you're having a glass of it again today after the first wine, you still say a tov meitiv. Begin with the next line. Yesh omrim. Di'im shata tchila yayin adam. No, we don't need to read that. Sorry, that's not important for us. Okay, let's go on. So again, to summarize, you always say a tov meitiv as long as you know the second wine is not worse, and it doesn't even matter if it's yayin chadash, yayin yashan, doesn't matter if you drunk this wine before or not before, you say a tov meitiv. And now we're in Gimel, which is the last word of the third to last line. Ready? Hiviu lo yayin ra. V'yayin tov ke'echad. They brought for him bad wine and good wine at once. Both bottles were put on the table. So we already learned
when both petals are on the table at the same time, you're not going to say a tov meitiv over the second glass of wine. Okay. Let's see what it says here. Yivarech miyad borei pri hagafen al hatov. You immediately say borei pri hagafen on the tov. You should pick the best wine to say borei pri hagafen. V'foteh atara, and that exempts the bad one. Bad, of course, doesn't mean bad. It means less good here. And that exempts the other one. V'lo yivarech al hara tchila borei pri hagafen. Kedei levarech acharav hatov meitiv. And you shouldn't choose the less good one at the beginning to say Brei Pri Hagafen in order to say Hatov Meitiv on the second one. You shouldn't do that. Ki le'olam yesh levarech al ha'ikar v'al ha'chaviv t'chila. Because always you should say the blessing on the ikar, on the main one, and the beloved one first. It's just not the right thing to do. In the laws of Brachot, to pick the worst one to say Brei Pri Hagafen, supposed to pick the better one. But let's think now of the implication of what we just learned. The implication is, what if you did say Brei Pri Hagafen over the worst one? Then what do you do when you get to drink the better one?
You have to make a tough amount to me.
See, there's an argument between Brooks and Mr. Gala. Mr. Gala says you have to say a tov meitiv.
No, I'm saying you do.
So that's true. No, but it turns out...
If it's on the table in front of you, you don't.
Right. So we seem to have a contradiction here.
No, they're consistent. The reason that it says, don't say the... It says, if you have a good and a bad, and you're... It says, don't make the tov meitiv on the second one. Why? Because you're compounding your error. You weren't supposed to have done that.
I'm listening, but I'm not fully following.
In other words, you're supposed to, it's keeping you in order. Do the good one first. If you're doing the right thing, you've done the good one first, and now you wouldn't have any question in front of you.
Right.
You don't want any incentive to do the wrong thing. You're supposed to take the good one first. That's the way you do it. So you don't get the...
Okay, but we could say the opposite also.
Okay.
We could say that the only reason we were told that if you have two of them on the table at the same time, you don't say a tov meitiv when you have the first one, okay, let's read it in the Mishnah Berurah. I can't say it out. Let's read it in the Mishnah Berurah.
I saw the circumstances as kind of different and answering the question for us that if you have both available immediately, then you pick the better one to say Brei Pri Hagafen.
True.
Okay. If one is on the table but it's not being served yet, it's on the table but maybe it's being reserved for dessert, then you would say Brei Pri Hagafen on what's being served, and then Tov HaMeitiv when that other wine is served. It was on the table, but you're not going to choose the dessert wine then. See, that's
because I don't know if you're allowed to do that.
You mean the dessert wine's better, you're assuming?
I'm saying the dessert wine's better. It's on the table, but it's not what you're choosing to...
But you're not supposed to choose what you're saying you chose, because you're supposed to choose the best one to say Brei Pri Hagafen.
The best one from among what? From what's on the table? Because that would avoid a situation that you would... The only situation you would ever make a tov meitiv would be if a guest walks in the door...
In the kitchen.
It could be that you chose to leave it in the kitchen, but you can't put it on the table.
Okay. But if it's
on the table, you have to say the blessing over it.
But from the circumstances on the second, it was what was brought to you.
Right.
So it's kind of like what's being served.
Right.
You know, and I'm thinking, you know, this is, you know, protocol. This is, you know, and...
So you're saying
I understand. You're saying that it could be on the table, but it's not considered to been served.
Available. It's not available.
Yeah. They come around. Some houses, you know, I mean, you know, not my house, but some houses, they come around with two bottles. Would you like the Merlot or would you like the Bordeaux?
Yeah.
Oh, well, the Bordeaux is better. I'll say the Brei Pri Hagafen over that. Okay.
Right.
Okay, but no, they're not. They're not doing that right now. They're just coming around with wine to
I
serve.
Understand.
And there's a champagne there for later.
Yeah, but it's designated as later. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure, but I'm here.
I'm
what
just
saying.
Yeah, I'm trying to justify it.
I have to say Baruch Tain Emet. I have to go.
Okay. Shavuot Tov.
Okay. So we have in front of us a potential tension between two different halachot, right?
Yeah.
We have to resolve that tension. So let's remind ourselves of what the tension is. The tension is that we had been told in the previous halacha that you only say Tov Meitiv in the second one when the second one was not Lifanav, was not in front of you when you said Brei Pri Hagafen. But now we have a halacha that seems to say differently, because it says that you shouldn't bless on the Ra first in order to say a Tov Meitiv on the other one, and implies that you're not supposed to do it, but you could have done it. That you could have, you have both in front of you, and you could say a Tov Meitiv on the second one. You shouldn't do that, because you shouldn't have chosen to drink the Ra first. But it sounds that if you did, then you would have said a Tov Meitiv on the second one, even though it was Lefanav. So the Mishnah Berurah says as follows, in the bottom of the page, Gimel, Al Hatov v'chulei, Mutar lo lechatchila, Levarech Brei Pri Hagafen, Al Echad, Ubirkat Hatov al Sheni, Ap Shehuvu lefanav lechatchila, Shnehen ke'echad. Translation: if he is in doubt which of them is good and which is bad, it's permitted to begin with to say Brei Pri Hagafen on the first and Birkat HaTov on the second, even when we're brought in front of him to begin with, both of them at the same time.
Mm. That's going to be the more widely accepted behavior.
So can you just say that again, please?
Yes. You don't know which is better and which is worse. You're allowed to say on one of them Brei Pri Hagafen and on the second one a Tov Meitiv, even if both were brought to him at the same time.
You don't have to make two blessings if it's on the second part, you know.
No, you never make two blessings.
Yeah.
The point is you're allowed to
only one blessing. It's automated.
On the second one.
On the second one.
Even though the second one was there
when
he's the blessing over the first. So it seems like that what we thought was a principle is not a principle. We thought there's a principle that if they're both in front of him, then you don't say blessing Brei Pri Hagafen on the first and Tov Meitiv on the second. No, you do. So it turns out what we had been told, that when both are brought to him together, you don't say blessing one and then blessing two. That's only because you were supposed to have said Brei Pri Hagafen over the better one, and therefore you can't say a Tov Meitiv over the other one because it's worse. But if you didn't do what you're supposed to do, either willingly or out of ignorance, because you don't know which is better and which is worse, then you do say two blessings, even though they're both in front of you at the same time, you do say Birkat Brei Pri Hagafen on the first and on the second Tov Meitiv. So the halakha was confusing, but now it's clear, just to say it once again, there is no law that says, there's no law that says that if you're both at the same time in front of you, that you can't say Brei Pri Hagafen and over the second one Tov Meitiv. There's no such law. That's what you do. Rather, in an ideal situation, you wouldn't find yourself in such a case. Because you would know, here's the better one. I bless the better one first. Once I bless the better one, I can't say Tov Meitiv over the worse one, because it's only over the better one. But in situations which you don't know which is better, which is worse, or you made a mistake,
then certainly you do over the second glass of wine. If there's a chance that it's better, right? Not a chance that it's better, then you say Tov Meiti.
How are we assuming that your knowledge changes in the interim? I mean, you taste it.
It didn't change.
No, you still don't know.
Exactly.
You say there's two bottles of wine. Oh, these look like two pretty good bottles of wine.
Okay.
I don't know. We're going to do Bray Priyagoffin.
Yes.
Is this one going to be better or not? I don't know.
You just say MIT.
I still don't know.
As long as you don't know that it's worse. Remember that line? As long as you don't know that it's worse.
Nobody knows it. Either your kids. It's
a very affluence thing. Idea, too. They're heavy.
Okay, so now things are getting clearer.
Yeah.
It's better to have one wine over not two
wine. I don't know.
Just to prepare one wine for the table, that's all.
Why should
we break our heads with two wines?
Because we want to enjoy ourselves.
That would be on French.
Okay.
What was it, Francais?
So we already are on the page that says at the top, Reish Tzadik Hei. Right on that page, and we are reading on and there's one more piece of the Mishnah Berurah, which is actually something that I asked Rabbi Riskin at David Rudunsky's house. If you remember, you sat me next to him, and the host brought additional wines, and there was more than two wines, there were three. I asked Rabbi Riskin how many times you say a Tov Meitiv each time there's another glass of wine.
Uh-huh.
And he said to me what the Mishnah Berurah says right here. You ready?
Uh-huh.
The fourth line, the last two words of the line, Sheshote afilu kama yenot, when he drinks even kama, a few wines, mevorech al kol echad birkat ha-tov. You bless on each one birkat ha-tov. In other words, each time you get a new glass of wine, and you don't know that it's worse, right? You say a Tov Meitiv. So you can end up saying a Tov Meitiv five times.
I look forward to that situation.
Or more, right? An infinite number of times.
An infinite number of times. Although you don't say brachot when you're drunk.
Right. Again, that will become.
Yeah. Okay. So, now we move up to the Shulchan Aruch.
You have to drink when you say the bracha. I assume you have to drink a certain amount. There's no shiur.
The shiur was only what I said earlier, in order to have been yotzei brei priyagafen. Then you need malo lugmav. You need a cheekful.
But tov meitiv, there's no shiur.
No, there's no shiur. Okay. Well, there's never shiur for bracha rishona. Right? There's never a shiur for bracha rishona. The question only here is. The question only here is, when you heard someone else's bracha for kiddush, does that exempt you from your own glass of wine? And that's only if you had malo lugmav. Okay, so now, back to the Shulchan Aruch at the top of the page. We are conscious of the time. The end of the first line is Seif Dalet. Ein levarech hatov meitiv, ela im kein yesh acher imo. You are not to bless Hatov Meitiv, except if so, there is someone else with you. In other words, if you're sitting down to a private meal, you don't say Hatov Meitiv. It's only when you're in company. Dehachi mashma, that thus is the meaning of Hatov lo v'meitiv chaviro, good for me and does good for my friend.
Oh, Hatov Meitiv,
right, we talked about this.
Yeah.
In other words, there's a double meaning to the bracha. On the one hand, the bracha means affluence, good and even better. But on the second hand, it means good for me and good for him. So you have to have these two conditions, that the wine can't be worse, it has to be possibly better, and there has to be someone else to have a feeling of better with.
To be involved.
To be involved. It has to be a party.
Concurring opinion.
V'hu hadin im ishto v'nav imo, and it's the same thing if his wife and his sons are with him. You don't need a friend. It could be a family member. Aval im hu yechidi, but if he is alone, lo, you don't say tov meitiv when you're alone. You need to have a party. Okay. That's nice, right? That's a bracha over fellowship.
Yeah.
The affluence in fellowship. Let's go to the Mishnah Berurah. It's about the sixth line of the Mishnah Berurah, the beginning of the line, Dalid.
Saif Dalet, and the opening word, the Dibor Matril, is Imo. Vishote Meoto Hayayin. And he drinks from that wine. It's not enough to have someone else there. He has to drink with you. Right? Not just a kind of fellowship when someone is looking on from the outside. He has to drink with you. So, by the way, those people who try and get me to drink, here's a way to do it.
Right.
You can prevail upon me halachically. Look, I can't say Tov Meitiv unless you drink with me.
Right.
This, I think, would also discourage people from, you know, drinking too much alone. I mean, you know, an alcoholic, you know.
You can't say the brachot that you would say in Betzavta, in a fellowship that you could say that when you're alone, you can't say those brachot. You need a fellowship.
You know, there's cases of addicts, you know, looking for people to drink with or smoke with or whatever, you know, do things with, you know, to justify their own behavior, I think.
But it really is more fun when you have company.
Right.
Yeah.
So the halacha has a bracha for that. Okay, so it says, "Beshote meoto hayayin, aval im eino shote elohu levado." But if he's not drinking except him himself, o sheshote rak haviro levado, or his fellow is drinking alone, and you're just watching, ein mivrachin alze birkat tov. We do not bless on this birkat tov. And now the Mishnah Berurah adds a second condition, which is something we also learned about earlier. V'gam bayinan davka sheyeh lechaviro shutafut boto hayayin. And also bayinan means we require specifically, sheyeh lechaviro, that there will be to his fellow shutfut, ownership, partnership in that wine. It's not just enough for him to drink with you, he has to have some ownership over it. And since it's a good idea, always, in order to remember halacha, not to get a misimpression at the beginning, we'll see at the end that ownership, it's enough if you're the balabait, if you just give him a glass of wine, then he has no ownership on it. But as long as you put the bottle on the table, and everyone's allowed to take from it, that's already considered ownership, right, as we're about to see.
So this harkens back to the ownership, you know, required when you're going to bless the rain and the ownership
exactly.
of the land. Yeah.
That's great that you remembered going back a whole month. Remember that?
It's good, yeah.
On the field?
On the field.
Okay. So, aval imhu, the beginning of the fifth to last line, aval imhu rak oreach ba'alma, but if he's only a mere oreach, a mere guest, Shabalabait natan lo lishtot, that the balabait gave him to drink. Lo yecholo mar birkat tov. You can't say birkat tov. Neither of them can say. Neither the balabait nor the guest.
That means if the balabait pours it to him, right?
If the balabait pours it for him.
He doesn't take it himself.
Right, exactly.
He pours him a glass.
Exactly. V'chatav magen Avraham, but wrote the magen Avraham, the gam habalabait lo yuchalo mar bracha zo bofen ze. That even the balabait can't say the bracha in this sense. Not just the reach can't say it, the balabait can't say it, because they have to have shutfut. Im lo shabalabait himida kan kana l'shulchan lishtot mishiyotze. Except if the balabait placed the kankan, placed the pitcher, or the bottle, on the table to drink whoever wants. As long as I'm allowed to take what I want, that's enough of a partnership. But if the balabait only lets me drink what he gives me, then it's not a partnership. Haveka shoot the food. Then it's shoot food. As long as the bottle's on the table, the achol af ha'oreach levarech. And then even the oreach, and of course the balabait, can say the bracha of tov miti. V'ishto v'nav, and concerning wife and children, kevan shetzarech lefarnasan, haveka ilu yeshtam chelek bo. Since he has to mifarnesotam, since he has to, how do you say it in English?
Provide for them.
Therefore, it's as if they have a portion of it. Anything that's mine belongs to my family, so they have a portion of it, so then if I drink with them, we can certainly say, hatov metiv. Another condition, gan ba'einan sheshatu b'chabara b'yachad. We also require that they drank in a group together. Velo ze becheder ze veze becheder ze. And not one in one room and one in the other. Okay. Now another condition. Gam iskimu kam achronim, also have agreed a number of achronim, she'ein levarek birkat hatov, ele sheshatu shnehem mishdei hayinot. Except if both of them drank from both of the wines. Aval im shatu shnehem rak miyayin harishon, umiyayin hasheni shata rak echad, ulehefech. But if drank both of them only from the first wine, and from the second wine drank only one, or the opposite, ein levarek. You can't say the blessing. Both people have to drink from both wines, and they both have to have a certain ownership over it. Katvu achronim bevirkat atov yechol levarech bediavad. Wrote the achronim that the bracha of atov meitiv, you can bless bediavad, you can bless after the fact. Don't have to bless it before you drink the second wine. You're supposed to, but even if you already drank the second wine, then you remember, you can still say atov meitiv. Af shekvar shatav v'nizkar sheayin v'fiv. Even if he drank, already drank, and remembered when the wine is in his mouth. Shebolo mevarech achar kach, that you can swallow and bless afterwards. Aval en mizkar achar shekvar shatav, but if you remembered after you already finished drinking, ein kadai levarech, is not worth blessing. Umihu, however, sheyesh od yain bitkankan, if there's more wine in the bottle, well, say the blessing and drink again. Lekulei alma yechal levarech. All would agree you can say the blessing. Dedami lemisha shachach levarech hamotzi v'nizkar kodem gamar sudak. It's like someone who forgot to say hamotzi and remembered before he finished the sudah, before he finished the bread. So say hamotzi and drink and eat more bread. So to sum up everything we've learned until now, the halakha is that if you have two different wines and you don't know, okay, let's know. Two different wines, what you're supposed to do is bless over the better one. Great pirkei gufin.
If there's... Oh, no, go ahead.
Right, yeah. And that covers the worse one. And then there's no more blessings. But if you don't know which is better, of the two different wines, then you say over the first great pirkei gufin and the tov mitiv over the second, even if they're both there in front of you. And another case...
Given there's fellowship.
I'll get to that later.
Oh.
And the third thing that has to be said is that if there's only one wine on the table, then you say the blessing of Birkat Gafin. And if they bring one later that you don't know to be worse, you say Birkat Tov Meitiv. And then additional conditions for this, like you said, is there has to be fellowship, have to be two people at least drinking both wines. And in addition, the two people both have to have some type of ownership, at least in the sense that they're allowed to take from the wine that's available. And those are really all the conditions we saw. And let's see if we want to go on. Let me think very quickly. Right, so what we have here, we have, lots more pages? We have lots more pages. So we won't have time to do all those pages.
Okay.
So I guess we'll have to do some more next time. Okay.